Welcome to On Strategy Showcase. I'm Fergus O'Carroll in Chicago. This is our first episode of 2024, and it's good to be back from the holidays. Hope you guys had a great one. You can connect with me, as always, on LinkedIn or visit our website at onstrategyshowcase.com. You can see all of our episodes there. Also see the creative work and connect with all of our guests. Here's a clip from today's episode.
For a long time, in my experience, Connections was trying to force its way into the room. So there is a level of how effective is Connections being when we're no longer forcing our way into the room that we're being asked to join. We're being pulled into the process. And then that's a tangible thing that we can actually see in terms of FTEs increasing, percentages increasing, needing to hire more people. And, you know, I can look back over the last 12 months and see a tangible effect of more productive Connections integration throughout the entire process, purely because I can't fully staff all of the needs.
That's Stephanie Awey, Head of Connection Strategy at TBWA Chiat Day in LA. She's joined today by Brandon Salas, Executive Director, Head of Strategy at Annex 88 in Brooklyn, and Jonathan Daly, Head of Communication Strategy at Johannes Leonardo, New York. We're talking Connections and its role in effectiveness. Now, this is the second episode in a three-episode series, and what we're going to be doing is switching things up for the third episode, which will be launching in about 2 weeks. I think we've gotten a really strong, consistent perspective from the creative agency planners throughout these first two episodes. So I want to broaden the lens for the third one. So you can look out for that in a couple of weeks. I really think, and the reason for this is that, you know, given the critical nature of the relationship between creative agencies, connections planners, and their counterparts inside of media shops, our next episode needs to sort of bridge that gap. So we're going to be doing that by having heads of connections planning from the media agency side in the next episode. So that'll be exciting. I'm joined today for the intro to this episode by Anne-Marie Kerwin. She's America's editor for WARC, the voice for marketing effectiveness worldwide. I want to thank WARC for sponsoring this three-episode series and welcome Anne-Marie.
Hi, Fergus.
So in episode two, one of the things that became clear, and it's been a common theme, the fact that we can't have, the outcome of effectiveness be the responsibility of any one individual or any one practice area within a company or an agency culture, that it really does have to be seen as the responsibility of everyone within the organization. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree. I think we've seen that at WARC, and that's one of the reasons why we put out the report last year on building a culture of creative effectiveness. And that idea behind that is really embedding the idea of effectiveness throughout the entire marketing organization. So you've seen organizations like McDonald's be really successful building their own culture of creative effectiveness. They understand that marketing is an essential global growth driver. Morgan Flatley, the CMO, has talked about how at one point McDonald's had lost its brand swagger and the importance of having creative bravery. And so once they started putting into place this culture of creative effectiveness, there was a common language and tools embedded all the way through as to what great creative looks like.
So there's a big event coming up this month. We're now in January of 2024, a big event that you guys are doing with your new sister organization, Contagious, because you're all now part of Contagious is now part of Essential, which is also where WARC resides. Tell us about what people can expect from that event and how it ties into our theme here of effectiveness and effective outcomes.
Yeah, thank you. Morgan Flatley, actually the CMO of McDonald's, will be speaking. It's on January 24th here in New York City, and it's really going to be a day of thought-provoking debate on effectiveness, and people can come to Most Contagious in the morning or Creative Impact in the afternoon. They can come for the whole day. We have lots of great speakers lined up, including Elizabeth Paul from the Martin Agency and Adam Morgan from Eat Big Fish and Orlando Wood from System One. So it's going to be a really great event, and we're really looking forward to seeing everybody.
So for those who want to learn more, you can go to, this is a long URL, by the way, guys. It's contagious.swoogo, that's SWOOGO.com/mostcontagiousNewYork. That's contagious.swoogo.com/mostcontagiousNewYork. Yeah, looking forward to the event and hearing about how it all goes down. Thank you to Anne-Marie Kerwin, America's editor for WARC. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Fergus.
And we'll be right back with episode 2 after this message. This series is brought to you by WARC. Big news, WARC has relaunched its effectiveness awards to be bigger and better than ever. The WARC Awards 2024, in association with Lions, will celebrate strategic brilliance and effective impact. They're built and benchmarked on the consistent global framework of the Creative Effectiveness Ladder. So if you're a marketer or a strategist with an example of effective marketing, this is an unmissable opportunity to amplify your great work to WARC's community of more than 75,000 marketers. With 12 categories and 5 regional award shows, you enter once for the chance to win in both your region and a chance to win a global Grand Prix where you can prove your campaign is the most effective in the world. Entries are now open with the final deadline on February 6th, 2024. For more info on the fees and regions covered, head to warc.com/awards. That's warc.com/awards. Now back to the show. It is great to have you all here. And so I wanted to start off with a question that we didn't dig deeply into in the first episode, but I thought you guys would be a great, Stephanie, to start off with, which is, what problem was connection strategy the answer to?
Was or constantly is. I mean, I think, you know, some people might say the evolving media landscape and how do we break through in that? And I think that's one piece. But, you know, the job is really about the audience. And I think connections really is the answer to brand strategists and creatives really trying to figure out what to do with their brand, but doing that in silo without the audience being a big piece of that puzzle is really what connections is solving and why I believe it's such an important part throughout the entire process.
So when you talk about the audience, what do you mean? You're bringing what to the table about the audience?
You know, what they want from a brand, where they're going to experience a brand, how do they want to experience a brand? You know, we see this, you know, any channel, but I think acutely it's easy to see in social. If we only are putting out things that matter to the brand to say, and what we want to say, what we want people to know about us, it's very easy to fall on deaf ears. So if we don't think about what the audience needs or wants to hear from us, how they want to hear from that, then we might just miss them completely.
So I totally get that. And I would have thought that media people, if there was a media strategist here, and, you know, arguably, let's see here, let me look at all these titles. Yeah, I mean, well, no, there isn't a media strategist by title here, but I would think a media strategist would say, well, that's what I bring to the table. And that's where the overlaps start to happen, Stephanie. Is it different in your mind from what the connection strategist is doing versus the media strategist?
Sometimes. I think that this is why, you know, the connections strategist role sits in a lot of different agencies. You know, prior to Shiat, I worked at a creative agency that had media planning and buying as part of it. And part of that group, we had comms and connections planners. And so sometimes it's different pieces of the puzzle. But I think at a creative agency, we are looking at the audience lens through how do we want this creative idea, how do we want this brand experience to be experienced by them? Whereas sometimes, in my opinion, when you are playing more, looking at it more from a media lens, you might be more impacted by ROI, efficiency, CPMs, and those really kind of media best practices, media trade tools that might drive your decision-making versus having the creative idea and the audience kind of at the center. But I think media can be the driver of that, but not always.
So, Jonathan, what about for you in terms of the problem that connection strategy is the answer to? Because it's a relatively, it's not new as in a handful of years, but it is newer than other forms. Why do you think it came into being?
Ooh, I'll build on Stephanie's answer, but I'm actually going to go one step back because I actually do think that connection strategy versus comms planning, it actually is important and builds on part of your probes to Stephanie when you're asking about why don't you have a pure play media strategist sitting in this conversation. I think that Stephanie's 1,000% right. I think where you sit in like the Marcom ecosystem and how you like what more discrete problem you're working at does color how you approach the job of, you know, connecting a brand with a consumer. That's we're all trying to figure that out from a strategic point of view. But where you sit in the process and what you claim ownership of does inform how you do that job. And I think why I eschew the term connection strategy and like to think a little bit more macro when we're talking about comm strategy is because the problem that we're trying to solve is not just how does the consumer want to experience a brand or to experience a campaign or to receive a message and how to deliver that in the most effective way possible, but we're ultimately trying to figure out how are we going to deliver on a core objective, media agnostic, right? I think the best comms plans come from, like, I'm at my happiest when I go, actually, if you have one extra dollar to spend, you shouldn't spend it on a social ad. What you actually need to do is give it to your category team, CPG client, because the actual problem that you have to solve is that you're on the bottom of the shelf at Rite Aid and you need to be at eye level in order to win that incremental share point or that incremental dollar from a consumer. Like, I think that's the ultimate problem that I think comms was designed to solve was cool, cool, cool. And as a recovering brand planner, like literally one agency ago, I can say this. Cool, 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 brand planner. You've got this really big, lofty why and this purpose for this brand to live in the world. Exactly how does that interact with or connect with how regular Joe Schmoes are actually just walking around living their lives? And I think comms tries to do that. And I think connections makes very much about how they live their lives on these devices, right? Whether it's a screen like the one that I'm talking to you through right now or the screens that surround us constantly versus comms, at least I think the way that all three of us practice it, tries to just look at how they live their lives, how they navigate categories, how they make decisions, and then come back with smart and hopefully additive builds for creative to make the right interjection in that consumer's day to hopefully move them towards an action or move them closer to an action than they were prior to that. Quick interruption in their day.
Yeah, I mean, certain elements of, you know, what Stephanie and John are saying are resonating with me. But I think because of where I've come from and what I've come through, I just look at it a little bit differently, right? So, you know, what connection strategy is actually answering for me is, you know, what are the cool and awesome and interesting and smart places that the work is showing up that really helps telegraph and convey what the idea and intention is. So, you know, starting my career like in creative shops, I was more friendly with the creatives than my brand planning counterparts, because I would help them make the case study video, right? You have an awesome idea, awesome TVC, whatever it is, awesome intention, but in that latter half of the case study video where the idea lived here, it did this, it said this, and you're kind of flashing all these things in this 2-minute, you know, canned entry. I'm helping kind of answer those questions. And it was, you know, creatively driven, but then still connected to media place or non-media and real business problems, real day in the life and tensions of consumers. So for me, that was always the approach for comms planning or connections planning. And I think that was really the problem that I've been solving through my career.
Because Stephanie, it does bring to mind the question of, it's a curious question. It's the idea that, is the connections strategist's currency creative ideas? Is it tactical territories or ideas? Or is it something else?
I mean, if we're talking currency, if we want to talk about effectiveness, it's what did we make? How did we experiment? How did we try new things out there? And I think that's the world we live in. And so ultimately, yes, it is the creative ideas living in the world that is what we're judged on. That is the currency of the job.
So it's because it's always interesting to me to figure out how you manage the overlaps. As I brought up in the first episode, you know, from a typical sort of strategist perspective, let's label it a brand strategist for the sake of this discussion. A brand strategist was always told to stay out of the realm of ideas. You were to frame a strategy, and what sort of became the accepted wisdom was that strategists were not in the business of ideas. But it seems that connection strategists are living and sort of loving and being successful living in that world of ideas. So it's not just about understanding. It's about the conversion of understanding into ideas. Is that a fair way to think about it, Jonathan?
It's different across the industry. It's different in every shop. I know, and yes, I agree with the premise of your question around what we were traditionally taught as brand or comms or connections planners versus how we actually practice it today. There are tons of brand planners who are borderline creative strategists and get very close to the work. I think to Stephanie's point, because we are much closer to how that creativity gets applied, we are naturally closer to the idea. And hopefully we're being additive. We're not the people who are, you know, we're not the ones who are there going, you can't fit it into this buy. We're finding ways to help extend the idea and balancing where the balancing with our creative partners where the idea has to live in order to drive the business and reach those audiences who need to give that message in order to take the action or shift the perception that we want shifted or action that we want taken.
I was going to say for me, to answer the question, I wouldn't say creative ideas. I do differentiate between creative ideas and conceptual ideas. I do believe the concepts live in the creative department, but we all have ideas, whether it's a production idea or strategy idea or whatever it may be, right? That's where the ideas industry and the creative industry, but I think the concept still lives within the creative department. I don't expect anyone in the strategy department with any sort of titling, whether it's connections or whatever, to come up with conceptual ideas.
Right.
But maybe it is, you know, brand planners answer like a human kind of like territory and an insight. But I think what we would do is we're kind of like saying, hey, play with these canvases. Here are these creative opportunities that solve these needs, whether it's helping push onto the concept or helping take advantage of a media plan. And that's like what I try to bring to the briefing and to not be duplicative and not to be overlapping with my brand planning counterparts or to my media friends. And I do also just want to add, like, I think in the question of do we bring tactical territories or tactics, I used to shy away from that because the industry made tactical sound so bad and so beneath and little, like, oh, Brandon, you're so tactical.
Yeah, it was an insult, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, and I love what John was saying, like, yeah, like, tactical isn't, like, specific isn't bad, right? Like, you know, living at such a high elevation, that sounds nice and great, and it makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside, but, like, what are we actually doing? And I think when we're able to speak that language, especially when you're speaking to a client who doesn't have a creative bone in their body sometimes, like, they just want to know, what are we doing, you know? And I think that's what we help bring.
What are we doing, and what are the beautiful constraints, right? Like, You know, like, I'm like, yeah, you can be as creative as you want if the sky is as big as the ocean or whatever the saying is. But, like, you know, if you have to do it in this tiny box, like, what? Show me how creative you are in that tiny box. Then I'm impressed, you know?
So, Stephanie, you talked earlier about an agency that you had been at before and that there were this mix of planners. You mentioned media strategy people. There were connections, et cetera. How did that team function? Was there a clear understanding of what each did? And were each of those disciplines comfortable with the overlap?
From a comms lens, you're upstream. You're looking at the big picture. You're looking at all of the touch points. You're looking at all of the ways that we could solve a problem. Whereas media is planning and buying media, right? Yes, from a strategic perspective, there's overlaps. And you work together, and that's... At Shiat, my most important partners externally are my media agency counterparts, mm-hmm. right? Building that partnership, we are on the same team ultimately, right? We have the same goals for the same client, all on a different mission, bringing different tools to the table. And it's not about fighting so that we can have a creative idea and change the whole media plan. It's how do we work together for maximum impact?
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that shared vision and shared ambition. So it honestly is one of the most important relationships, and it worked really well. I mean, I was at Wieden & Kennedy for years. That's the agency I'm talking about. And we know that they have a way of making great ideas possible. And so I think this proof of how that team worked internally well.
So if I'm a client, Stephanie, and I'm listening to this show and I'm thinking, okay, I totally get all of that. But then I also have my agency who wants to pitch me a social strategist, and they want to pitch me a digital strategist, and they want to pitch a PR strategist, and they have like four other strategists types that they want to pitch you. How do you explain the distinction between the roles of what you're doing and what those sort of channel strategists, i.e. like social, are doing? How do we reconcile all of these strategy resources?
The client, my agency partners might not like my response in that. Like, I mean, we just can't have all those people. I mean,
yeah, we just got to get rid of those people,
you know. And then I think this is the beauty of connections is, hopefully, if we are responsible enough, and we have we're taking and doing the right research and staying up to date on anything and everything that is in part of that the landscape today, like, we should be able to have kind of a purview across all of those things. I'm not saying all those strategists need to report into me, but you shouldn't need all of those people in a room. Of course, they might be a part of the process, but I don't know. That's my point of view.
Oh, I'm going to come for your neck, Stephanie.
Oh, no.
Come for your neck.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. No, I agree with you, but I think I do agree with you. I don't think we can have all those people in the room, but I think... what you said about us being at their core, a good comms person has to be. And when you're building out, whether you call it when you're building out your comms strategy, and you're codifying it in your engagement framework or campaign architecture, insert bullshit industry term for a very pretty chart that like outlines all the things here. I think you should be leading on that, like, understanding of the communications landscape that this consumer and that this problem is going to be living in for your respective brand. And I mean, one of my articles of faith that I try and put into practice at wherever I'm working at JL right now is that comms should have if brand owns what and why, comms owns how, and ostensibly where and when, in collaboration with your media partner. So you cast, comms should be, or connections should be responsible for, to your point, Stephanie, casting the additional specialist players that are in the room. Previous life in Anomaly, this is so bad. I'm so sorry, Frankie, if you're listening to this. They called them, they called comms the generals, and you had your special forces being all of your myriad of different strategic types. Insert them there. And your job was to choose which of your tactical teams you're going to, you know, deploy at a problem.
When I'm thinking about hiring my team and who I'm bringing in, half of it is looking at what is the current makeup? What is the background of this group of people? So, you know, I look at my team and I have somebody who spent time at a PR agency and a social agency. I have somebody who really was in media. I had somebody who straddled the line of integrated strategy and brand strategy. I have a comms planner through and through. And together, we kind of make this beautiful balance that then is super helpful when new business comes in, when new projects come about, that it might give people a way to move around and as a collective. Of course, if everyone could have all of those things, you know, that's the unicorn I would love to find. But, you know, together, we create this really broad but effective like sense of skills and experience that we can help each other and grow. And I'm curious if when you're talking about that and how you're thinking about your team, it kind of sparked. I'm curious if you think about like that a little bit.
Yeah, I would say hiring for our department, it's really tough because we all have different origin stories and it's sometimes outside of different industries, but I think what was seen as a luxury item hire or title of connections and comms planner a few years ago is now becoming a mandatory because of how, you know, like you said, we could be deployed in so many different ways. We could be built in so many different ways. And I think as we're kind of like growing the discipline cross industry, like let's make that T-shaped specialization the norm, right? Versus the exception. You know, before traditional brand planning departments, you were hyper specialized in one thing, but you go to another place and they don't know how to deploy you or leadership doesn't know how to integrate you. I think it might be interesting building like a practice and agency kind of around that mindset that, you know, I've been trying to integrate within the comms planning practice.
It's interesting. As I listen to all of this, I'm sort of putting on my mid-size agency and small agency hat and I'm going, Jesus, I'm listening to these guys talking about all these different types of roles and all these different types of strategies. And here I am at a small to mid-sized shop. We've got 5 planners that are in our entire department and shit, we do all of that shit. Is this sort of the luxury of abundance of large shops? Is this just a large shop thing that there are all these different titles?
No,
go ahead, Stephanie, please.
I think you need to look at those 5 planners and figure out is that the right group of people. And, you know, the hard truth is I think as the world has evolved, as media has evolved, you know, what Jonathan was saying earlier about we literally have these screens in our pockets, how we approach problems is different. And so maybe At a small shop, you've got a few planners and maybe that makeup needs to change. Maybe you really need a really strong connections planner to work hand in hand with a really great brand strategist. And that is your A team that can tackle a lot of problems. Also, though, the one thing I talked to my team about, you know, I believe the connections job is very different brand to brand. I'm not solving problems the same way on every single one of my clients. The way that we do things for Jack in the Box is very different from the way we do things for Gatorade, how we are needed. And I think you need to have that approach, especially at a smaller shop, especially at a mid-sized agency, of like, what is it that we need to help elevate our ideas or elevate the way people are experiencing our brands?
So let's turn the corner. I want to talk about the title of this series is Connections, Role, and Effectiveness. Now, in our first episode, we struggled with this topic. So I'm hoping in this episode, we'll be able to make it a little more concrete. It's a tough ask, and I know that. But can you isolate the added value to effectiveness of what you do? Are you able to point and say, this is what we do, and this is how we can quantify the difference that it makes? Does anybody want to start on that question? Because it's a pretty critical one from a business of effectiveness lens.
So I have two thoughts. I guess I can kick this off. When I'm thinking about it, and I think it's a hard question, so I'm glad you're asking it, because it's a good thing for me to be forced to think about, honestly. I think I'm seeing it in two different ways. Internally, like seeing the effect of a well-functioning connections group, and externally. So, you know, internally, when I measure, is connections working at Chiat Bay LA, for example, you know, we talked about all the people who can be in the room. And for a long time, in my experience, connections was trying to force its way into the room. So there is a level of how effective is connections being when we're no longer forcing our way into the room that we're being asked to join. We're being pulled into the process. And then that's a tangible thing that we can actually see in terms of FTEs increasing, percentages increasing, needing to hire more people. And, you know, I can look back over the last 12 months and see a tangible effect of more productive connections integration throughout the entire process, purely because I can't fully staff all of the needs. Whereas before it was like, well, agency is going to invest to try to prove out this. Well, we've shifted that paradigm. So from an internal perspective, seeing that actually in the room on scopes growing because of the added impact. But then externally and more tangibly, I think it's, if I look year over year, the experimentation within a media plan or go-to-market strategy, the new channels or a shift in how we are, you know, how media is dispersing money. Yes, that's a media role, but I think it's also a big part of the connections task, you know, working with that integrated agency team and shifting how we look at things and how we execute. What changed 6 months, 12 months, 18 months from actually how the brand existed in the world?
Yeah, I mean, the at the core of it, Jonathan, is the idea at the end of the year, if a client comes in and says, do I really need connections planners? What are the two slides you show them? I mean, so how do you prove your value? And are you able to isolate it?
Yes. I think I agree with, first of all, I agree with everything that Brendan and Stephanie have said so far. I think my two builds on that would be, in my case, I look both at like the top line results, right? Like, it's hard to parse like how much of it was like the strength and the brilliance of the actual creative idea versus the how it was executed, which is where like a lot of our work and our impact truly lives. How has our evolution of the way that they've gone to market, both in terms of the creative idea that we're using, but also how we're building things for platform in the social space, or how we're shifting or are adding new channels or new touch points to or new ways of showing up in consumers' lives, has connections by coming in with very specific, sometimes tactical builds on how a brand needs to show up in a specific channel. If you look at social, even, it's probably the easiest one to do it. Have we helped make the creative more resonant, more effective, ultimately more engaging, and therefore better able to do its job against X, Y, or Z objective? I think those kind of drill downs are where you can really prove your value.
It's an interesting issue because we talked about in the first episode about the difficulty of assigning value to any one person who's part of the whole.
Yeah.
So who's going to say that that idea was more the art directors than the writers? They're just a team, right? And do we need to not think of connections planning as being a separate entity, but just part of the whole? And because there is no yours and mine when you get into this part of the outcomes. I mean, it's our solution. I mean, even the tactical examples that are demonstrations of what connections may have developed as an idea, for example, a tactical idea or a creative idea, you can't even say, it was our idea. If the creative team was on here, they wouldn't be saying, oh yeah, that was theirs. Do we need to think of it as ours rather than mine? Is that the way to think about it, Stephanie or Jonathan or whomever?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's where that responsibility sits at the agency side. And, you know, to our conversation earlier about the smaller shops, if you believe in that connections role, I think it's the agency's responsibility to rethink how they are going to staff a team rather than expecting clients to pay for more FTEs. We know budgets are decreasing. It is our responsibility to give them the best makeup of the team who we think is going to be able to bring that idea forward. And so as the agency, we need to look at that and think about how we structure that so that that team, that core group of people, it is what it is.
So in your job at Annex 88, your title is executive director, head of strategy. Do you have in your group people that are labeled as comm strategists and other people that are labeled as connection strategists? Or what is the terminology you like to use?
It's connections. It's connections. And I feel like it differentiates us as a discipline from, you know, the rest of the interagency dynamic, where I think comms planning might sit in larger shops. We're a super small agency. So we're just trying to look for those labels that make us feel different and needed.
Jonathan, where do you net out in terms of Johannes Leonardo? What is the structure of your group? I mean, what are the common labels?
Our strategy team is broken into three. It's brand, comms, and insights. Our insights team is small but mighty. Qualimed, quant, ethnographers and data strats, comms planners, who all ladder into me and service their respective businesses across the our book of business, and then brand, obviously. I agree with Brandon's take. I think sometimes it's a bit of a tempest in a teapot. Are we connections or are we comms? Like, end of the day, like, we're all technically working towards the same thing. But I do think what I said earlier still holds true. Just had to wave somebody away. Still holds true in that where you sit does change the role quite significantly. It's not big agency versus large agency. It's are you the creative strategic AOR, and do you have purview and input over the entire breadth of how our brand shows up, or are you more downstream and therefore only concerned with certain parts of how that brand goes to market?
Stephanie, how about you guys at TBWA Chiat-LA? How are you guys structured in terms of types of titles?
Yeah, so we are the connections group. We have the connections department, and within the strategy department. So we've got data strategy, brand strategy, and then connections. And, you know, the way that I have thought about this is kind of what Brandon was saying. Like, there's so many different touch points, different ways we play throughout the process. Ultimately, it's about connecting a brand to its consumer. And I see comm strategy as a piece of that puzzle. That can be one thing in my toolkit that I pull out because that's the right thing for that brand and what's needed for the year, for the campaign, whatever. So I kind of wrap comms into connections, but it could also be six of one, half dozen of another. Like, I will also use it interchangeably depending on my audience, because if I know one client is more used to having a comms planner, then I'll just be like, yeah, connections, comms, you know, and I think that's okay too.
Anything you guys want to touch on before we wrap up?
The only thing I want to say is this is wow, let's hear it for the comms girlies. All right, look at this. This has been fun. Come on. Let's
out here.
We're getting our flowers.
Right. Yeah, actually, thank you, Fergus, because again, just like we were talking, we've had to earn that seat at the table. People are still like, wait, what are you? Connections? Like, so appreciate you elevating connections as part of this on strategy conversation and podcast. Like, you know, like Brandon said, I think comms and connections is the future. So appreciate you kind of seeing that and wanting to dive in and interrogate it a little bit.
It is Stephanie Awey, head of connections, TBWA Shiat Day in Los Angeles. It's Jonathan Daly, head of comm strategy, Johannes Leonardo in New York City, and Brandon Solis, executive director, head of strategy at NX88 in New York. Awesome. Second episode, guys. Thank you so much for letting me borrow your brains for this conversation. I really, really appreciate having you here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. It was great. Thanks for a kiss.
Happy holidays, everybody. This is the last episode I'm recording for this year. So it's going to actually air in the first week of January. But so anyway, I hope everybody had a good holiday. And the best for 2024. Thank you so much, and we'll see everyone on the next episode.